This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
So, Anthony, you remember when President Obama visited Boston back in March, right?
That's right. He went to Tech Boston Academy as part of his Education Month tour when he was moving around the country talking about the importance of education when it comes to ensuring the country's future.
That's right. So I want to play for everyone a clip from his speech at Tech Boston. He started off by saying that over the next 10 years, half of all new jobs are going to require an education beyond a high school degree.
Which means, obviously, first of all, you can't drop out of Tech Boston. That's not allowed. All right? You can't even think about dropping out. But can't even think about it.
Okay, so an applause line there.
And that applause was coming from students in the audience, most of whom were minority teens.
Exactly. And then the president goes on to say to those students, you know, you're going to need a college education. Tech Boston Academy does a great job preparing you for college. But
unfortunately, the reality is too many students are not prepared across our country. Too many leave school without the skills they need to get a job that pays.
So that right there is why I wanted to play back excerpts from the president's speech, because the reality is that unfortunately for many students, even in that audience at Tech Boston, no matter how well they are prepared, they just aren't going to complete college, especially if they're young men.
Right. And the College Board calls this an educational crisis. And the report this week found that just a quarter of African-American men and fewer than a fifth of Latinos hold at least an associate's degree. Minority women, on the other hand, outperform men regardless of race.
So this is our talker today: young men of color and the challenge of getting into college and staying there. The College Board is calling it a crisis. But is it really? Well, the College Board presented its findings in two new reports yesterday at the W.E.B. Du Bois Institute for African and African American Studies at Harvard. Joining us now is Kristen Pollack. She's Vice President of Advocacy at the College Board. Welcome to Radio Boston, Ms. Pollack.
Thank you.
I understand you've stepped out of a hearing at Capitol Hill to join us, so I appreciate you taking the time. But could you just give us the highlights on why you're calling college achievement a crisis amongst young men of color?
Certainly. Well, you played right before I came on some excerpts from President Obama's speech. And there's, you know, a growing recognition that in this globally competitive time, more college degrees are needed than ever. And the president, as you played, challenged the country to regain, again, its leadership in educational attainment. But when you look at the statistics, President Obama has a completion goal, the College Board has a completion goal, many people have completion goals. There's this growing recognition that post-secondary education is absolutely key in these times. But when you look at the statistics, what you find is that there is no college completion goal anywhere that will be met unless we focus on increasing the educational experiences and attainment of young men of color.
So let me ask you, what are the specific numbers, you know, if any, about how many young men of color are, achieving 2 or 4 year degrees? How bad is it?
So let me give you a couple of very startling statistics. Nearly half of young men of color, this is Native American, African American, Latino, as well as Asian American. Nearly half of young men of color aged 15 to 24 who have graduated from high school, they will end up either unemployed, incarcerated, or dead.
Hmm.
That is a startling statistic. Of the students 15 to 24 who are enrolled in post-secondary education, so that's a college at a community college or at a four-year institution, only 33% of Hispanics are enrolled in college. Only 33% of African Americans are enrolled in college, 8% of Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no question that improving the educational attainment, improving the overall educational experience of these men is really critical, not only to our nation, but to our society.
Did you, in the research that the College Board did, find any reason or conclusion as to why the problem is especially pernicious amongst young men? Because, I mean, you found that young women of color are outperforming or outachieving young men regardless of race.
Yes, so that's correct. So women are really driving college completion in America. And when you look at the statistics, what you find is there are a lot of different reasons, and that's why we focused on young men of color. We went ahead and looked at the stats, but also went and talked to 92 students at two-year colleges, tribal colleges, HBCUs, private colleges, public colleges, and asked them, tell us about your experiences. What is helping you? What is hurting you as you make your way through college? And what we found is there are a number of things that serve as catalysts as well as roadblocks to these students. I mean, these are not only students who are responsible for academics, but they're sometimes heads of households, their parents, their caregivers. Almost all of them have to work to pay for school. They experience racial prejudice. They're stereotyped on very narrow definitions of people of color. They take various pathways to get to and through college. Mm-hmm. So the pipeline description really doesn't apply to these students. You know, they don't fit neatly into that pipeline, meaning they take non-traditional routes to degree attainment. They may drop out of high school and then later receive a GED and then flow back in. So there are some unique characteristics around this, but I think with young men in particular, you see that these pressures of life, these different pathways to completion, kind of the lack of support, the lack of role models and mentors really get in their way.
And Kristen Pollack, I know I've just got to let you go here in a minute, but last question briefly, does the College Board have any suggestions on how to overcome this, how to turn these statistics around?
Yes. So, you know, there's not going to be one solution for a problem that is this deep-rooted and this complex. And fortunately, across the country, you can find programs at colleges, programs in high schools that are working to serve these students. At the very least, though, policymakers have to make improving outcomes for young men of color a national priority. I mean, we have to raise awareness about this issue. We need to increase community, business, and school partnerships to provide mentoring to support these young men. And we need to reform education to ensure that all students, especially young men of color, are college and career ready when they graduate from high school. Too many students graduate from high school, they are not ready and they are not prepared for college, and therefore they just don't get through. In addition, you need to create more culturally appropriate persistence and retention programs mm-hmm. that can provide some of the wraparound services that will increase college completion for young men. And the College Board is a membership organization of colleges, universities, districts, and schools. And so our members are actively putting different parts of these recommendations and have programs like this in place to serve these students.
Kristen Pollack, Vice President of Advocacy for the College Board, thank you so much for sharing the findings of your report today.
Thank you so much.
Well, listeners, there you have it. There's the groundwork for today's conversation, the challenge that young men of color face getting to and staying in college. Is that you? Do you believe what the College Board says when they find that young men are having a tougher time in higher education than young women? And what do you believe should be done about it? Tell us your story and your thoughts about academic achievement in higher education when it comes to young Black, Latino, Native American, and Asian men in America. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Well, joining us now is Claudio Sanchez. He's NPR's education correspondent. He's been reporting on all sorts of education issues for years at NPR. It's a real pleasure to have you on the program. Welcome to Radio Boston, Claudio.
It's good being with you.
Also with us is Adrian Hoggebrook. He is Chief Diversity Officer and Vice President for Enrollment Management and Student Success at Wheelock College. Adrian Hoggebrook, welcome to Radio Boston.
Great, thank you.
Well, Claudio, if I may start with you. You moderated a panel yesterday at the W.E.B. Du Bois Institute about the College Board's reports. You know, I want you to help us kind of unpack a little bit of what Kristen Pollack said in a moment about what this means in detail and on the ground about what students are facing. But your first thoughts as to the College Board's findings, is it as sensational as they're saying that young men are suffering so much in college?
Well, let me begin by saying that no statistic in this voluminous compilation of data is more damning of the status quo than the one that this report focuses on. One of two men of color, 15 to 24 years old, who graduated from high school will end up unemployed dead or incarcerated. I mean, this is astonishing. When I first saw it, I thought, are we talking about school dropouts here?
Mm-hmm.
So one good thing that I think should come out of this report is that the data will be scrutinized. We can all recall back when the American Association of University Women were alarmed at how young women, young girls were being treated in K-12 especially. And shortly thereafter, we saw an enormous amount of debate about whether or not that data, you know, could hold up under more scrutiny. And so I think that the College Board is doing a service by saying, okay, here's the data that we have concluded is alarming, and it is. Now let's go at not just the problem, but let's figure out if this is as serious and as urgent as it appears.
Well, from your reporting and your experience covering this issue across the country, do you feel that some of that urgency is at least warranted?
I'm still debating that in my own mind. I think that it is enormously important. It is a very serious problem, this whole question of young males of color who have all kinds of hurdles before them, not entirely of their making. Certainly there is a lot of evidence, for example, that institutions of higher learning, and something that Ms. Pollack did not mention is that, you know, this report was based on the interviews as well with 39 institutions in 5 regions of the country: New England, West Coast, Southwest, Midwest, and South. And there is a lot of evidence to show that institutions of higher learning, 2- and 4-year colleges, don't do nearly enough to identify, you know, students with a lot of potential, but who, because often they're the first in their families to attend college, are pretty clueless about the process from the very beginning to the completion of their high school education. I mean, these kids are not getting a lot of advice in high school, mm-hmm. first of all, about college access, about financial aid, about these kinds of things. And even after they clear those hurdles, as Ms. Pollack did point out, some of these kids just aren't prepared, and we've known that for a long time. Schools that they attend are often minority schools. These are schools that don't get the best teachers. These are schools that are in impoverished communities with high concentrations of poor kids, and I think all of those things kind of add up and create more hurdles. So the attrition rate is, to me, not the story. The story is what are institutions of higher learning doing to clear the path?
Well, let me get right into that question with Adrian Hagerbrook, your Chief Diversity Officer and Vice President of Enrollment Management and Student Success at Wheelock College.
Yes.
Great title, by the way. So first of all, just tell me, at Wheelock itself, are you seeing this problem on the ground in reality with young men of color? And first of all, just staying in college?
Yes, we are seeing this at the institutional level, and I think many institutions are. One of the things that Claudio mentioned that I absolutely support is that we're seeing a tremendous shift in the demographics of actually who's coming into higher education.
Mm-hmm.
And so many institutions are beginning to address that and thinking about, well, what are the right kinds of systems and supports that we do or we don't have in place to actually make success opportunities for students once they get there. The traditional model is to recruit them and then go back out and recruit another class. The model that we've developed at an institution at Wheelock College is to really think of that entire experience as the student experience. So what is it that you do from the very first point of contact all the way through what we call success in their graduation and beyond?
Well, let me ask you, do you have young men of color coming to you and saying, I really want to stay, but I can't, and here's why? And what are the whys that they're telling you?
Sure. Some of the whys are some of the very ones that most institutions will hear. They don't feel that they have the right kind of supports in place to make them successful to stay.
What does that mean?
Specifically, it means that in many cases, they don't see people who look like them. They don't feel that there's a degree of cultural competence at that institution that really understands who they are and what experiences they bring and they share. And I think a third piece is often, thinking about that the largest demographic coming into higher ed are those who are first in their families. First generation is often linked to, but again, let's not generalize, those who come from low-income backgrounds or come from under-resourced communities and schools. And so there are financial reasons that often become a part of that. And so I think those are some of the pervasive issues that exist, and they do they can transfer to a lot of students, but particularly for students of color, males of color, we do see this in more often.
Mm. Claudio Sanchez, you know, you've injected what I feel is a very necessary note of thoughtful skepticism here. And earlier when you and I were talking before the program, you'd also mentioned that perchance one thing that the report, the College Board report, doesn't look at necessarily is community colleges and the services they provide for young men of color. Can you take us into why you thought that was a particularly important issue?
Well, community colleges, in my view, are doing a much better job than four-year institutions, even with some exceptions, in really helping keep these kids and making it easier for them to make this transition from high school to college or to post-secondary education. I mean, colleges, community colleges are far more flexible in everything from, you know, schedules to access to programs, or at least, you know, if these kids are coming in with very poor skills, I mean, there's a lot more help, at least I think, in some of the stories I've done about community colleges. So I think that this is the one institution that can be an incredibly valuable stepping stone for getting more minority males into those four-year institutions, into those degree programs that we all want them to complete. Let me go back, though, and just say something about, you know, this whole question of a cultural, the cultural friendliness, for lack of a better term, that exists on college campuses. I differ somewhat from the point that was just expressed in that, you know, And this is based on, in fact, stories that we've looked at, as well as others have reported on. You know, when you look at historically black colleges, for example, you'd be amazed about how different some of these institutions approach predominantly black students. Some of these schools who take these first generation black kids onto their campuses do a much better job. Now, these are all predominantly black institutions. And so there is here little or no argument about whether there is a cultural environment in which the student feels welcome. Some institutions, like Howard, for example, has a 60% retention rate versus other historically black colleges that have a very, very small retention rate, maybe 9, 10%. What explains that? I think it boils down to very practical things. The quality of advising that these students get right off the bat. If they need help, you know, what are the remediation programs? How are those offered? How do they stigmatize the kid? Or are they really good programs that help these kids improve their skills? I think there are just very basic, very practical things that schools need to do to get these kids up to speed and to keep them on campus.
Well, Claudia, I just
the cultural environment is, I think, you know, it's somewhat of a more kind of a mushy area in which to get it.
Well, and actually, speaking of practicalities, I want to get Adrian Hagerbrook back in here to talk about some of the practical things you are doing at Wheelock College.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with some of what you said, Claudia, but also would push back on a couple of points that you made. I would be very careful about how you define the cultural environment. If you're using representation in terms of the actual numbers or the diversity numbers of an institution, that's not what I would call the definition of cultural competence or the cultural environment. It is thinking about what are the necessary understandings and experiences that help students in support as we think about the kinds of supports that are needed for mentorship, for advising, for the other kinds of things. For example, Wheelock College, we found over the last 3 years that over 50% of our entering class are first in their families to go on to college. Also, during those last several years, we've increased our overall student diversity from race ethnicity to almost a third of the entire population. But it's the supports and it's the understanding of student experiences that really have helped us to completely overhaul our retention rates, to completely overhaul as we're moving to higher graduation rates. And so let's be clear that we're not just talking about what people look like. So those supports are very key to really helping students in their success.
Adrian Hagerbrook, let me ask you, you specifically at Wheelock have a new type of advising program that gets right at these issues of having a different kind of support for these young men when they come into college. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. And this is an advising model that really transcends all students. But we've really looked at our data over the last few years to understand what are the necessary tools and experiences and needs that students have as they go through their experience at Wheelock. And we've implemented an advising model that we call our 2+2 model, where each student, and we are a small college, so we have this opportunity to do this, where each student actually is paired with a professional advisor for their first 2 years at Wheelock College. We work with them with academic success planning. We work with them on academic skill development. We help them map out their entire educational and social and cultural experience at the institution in partnership with our faculty. So they get that the appropriate kind of support, and they begin to truly understand what responsibility they have in actually ensuring their success.
Claudia, I want to come back to you, but I also want to get some of our callers in here. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Susan is calling from Framingham. You're on the air, Susan.
Hi. Fantastic discussion. Very interesting. I was a high school English teacher for 13 years. A large number of those in sort of urban-esque districts with a lot of students of color, and then a few years on the other side of the track, so to speak. I'm just disappointed not to hear a discussion of social class entering into this, because I think that has a lot more to do with the kind of high school education students get in terms of President Obama's comments about students being underprepared in high school, number one. Also, I think that sort of social values, as they're espoused by social class, have a lot to do with those understandings that students arrive at college with, which is, I think, what your most recent speaker, whose name I forget, was just addressing.
Adrian Hagerbrook, yes.
Yeah. So I guess I would like to hear some comments about social class.
Sure. Sure. Susan, let's pick that up. Thank you for your call. Claudio Sanchez, your thoughts.
Well, you know, at this meeting or this conference at Harvard yesterday, it clearly race and social class are the one things, or some of the things anyway, that are far more complex than, you know, in this question, in this issue. I would agree with the caller, with Susan, about how we kind of tiptoe around this whole question. I mean, this is a nation, after all, that kind of, you know, would like to believe that it is now race blind and that it all does boil down to class, and within both Latino, Asian, Native American, and the Black communities, there is this internal debate. You know, is it more class than it is race these days that keeps that allows some kids to go to college and others not? I think that's a huge question. Mm-hmm. I don't think this report really addresses it. I think it has to be part of the conversation, though. You know, people like to believe that once you've broken that cycle, and that your offspring will go to college and you assume that theirs will too, that becomes really overcoming an enormous hurdle. And I think that's a given. I think that's the data shows that. Second generation, third generation Latinos in particular, for example, who go on to college, never look back. And the question is that in the case of Latinos, though, you have this constant influx of immigrants who come with very little or no education, parents with little or no experience in higher ed. And so their children often, you know, fall into the traps or the trappings of bad schools, bad education, and little or no opportunity beyond that. So anyway, the class issue is a big one.
You know, I don't want to drift too far away from the gender issue, too, that brought this conversation, you know, to our table today. I mean, here's some more numbers from the College Board's report. For example, in 2007, 2008, and these are the percentages of folks earning a bachelor's degree, a four-year degree. Amongst African Americans, 65% of them were women, 35% men. Amongst Hispanics, 60% women, 38, almost 39% men. Among whites, 56% women, 43% men. So still a disparity there, but a little more balanced. So with those numbers in mind, I want to bring in one more voice into this conversation very briefly. His name is Bill Tyner. He's an anthropology major at Wesleyan University, so a current student. Bill, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. I guess my quick question for you is, you know, you're a young man of color. You're in college, doing well. Do you see that, you have different challenges, or do you feel like you have different challenges than, say, young women of color who are your classmates?
I think that there's a certain stigma with being a Black male on campus, and being, especially if it's an all-white institution, a predominantly white institution, there's certain, you know, the age-old you know, angry, got in because of his race and all of those stigmas and stereotypes. And so there are, but I think that also applies to women as well.
Mm.
You know, just being very not interested in communicating with the rest of the community. But I think a lot of other, I think what is overlooked is like the, just the overall privilege of certain other students interrelate, and then compared to what I guess most African American students experience. I mean, I think really one thing, that one point that hasn't been brought up, I guess, I mean, in the social class it has been, but just social capital and what people, you know, are, you know, come up with and what opportunities they have when they're younger in high school and SAT classes to, you know, musical lessons, so all those things that typically boil down to if you have money or not.
Right.
So, you know, what you can afford to prepare you better for college.
Bill, stand by here for just a second. In about the minute that we have left, Adrian Hogebrook, you know, we've talked about some practical things that you're doing at Wheelock College, but this seems to be, you know, a major problem that reaches deep into communities
it
as
does.
Well. So, you know, your thoughts on ways to move forward, you know, within the African-American community, Latino community, to get more men to achieve right. At the rates that they could be.
Well, one of the things that we have done at Wheelock is that we've created a model where we're actually doing the pre-collegiate work in the community as we think about how do we raise all boats with a specific focus on males of color. And so as we think about how do you get quality information around readiness and preparedness for college and being able to be successful in college, we're creating a bridge that really looks at this as early as middle school all the way through. And so the last speaker was absolutely right. It is about social capital. It really is about understanding what resources are available to you, but they have to be quality resources and quality information.
Well, Adrian Hogebrook, Chief Diversity Officer and Vice President for Enrollment Management and Student Success at Wheelock College, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Claudio Sanchez, NPR's education correspondent, such a pleasure to have you on Radio Boston. Thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.
Bill Tyner, an anthropology major at Wesleyan, it was great to hear from you as well. Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Well, coming up after the break, the top 10 things not to say to the parents of preemies. It's definitely an interesting list. And if you have more to say about this issue and young men of color and college achievement, send us your thoughts at radioboston.org. We've got a good conversation. Hopefully we'll be going there. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, along with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.